So, well, thanks, Jade, for coming down to the radio station with us.
You bet.
So tell me about heritage wheat. What is it?
So when we talk about types of wheat, you know, there's, I'll kind of give a little background and come back to your question,
yeah,
if that's
please.
Okay. So types of wheat can be broken into a lot of different categories, like varieties and taxonomical classifications, which we won't get into much here. But kind of generally out there, there's a cultural discussion going on about heritage wheats, as some people call them, heirloom, and ancient. And these are some of the words that are used out there. And so heritage generally refers to wheats from our past, you know, the grains that were used by our ancestors or grown by ancestors, eaten by them. And so I would take heritage and break it down into two basic categories, which is heirloom and ancient. And heirloom is generally referring to the grains that were brought here to the United States in the mid to late 1800s. This is when, you know, George Washington built a mill there on the East Coast, and they were able to, rather than get their flour from England, they could grow grains here and mill their own flour. That's a big deal. And the grains grown around that time, and, you know, if you go back to that late 1700s, they didn't have a lot of grains yet because they were bringing their flour in from England. And so they had to ship it across the seas, and it was a form of control over us. So by having that mill, George Washington was able to essentially establish another level of freedom here with the United States. And then in the mid-1800s, grain started being imported from France and from Germany and different countries throughout Europe. And some of these grains are called like heirloom. These are referred to as heirloom grains, would be like Red Fife, Turkey Red, and then other words I can't pronounce because they're in other languages. But they are these heritage grains were chosen by the farmers at that time because they got really nice yields and they produced good bread. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So basically it was like an economics thing for them. They started choosing the varieties even way back then that performed better. So usually when we're talking about heirloom grains, we're talking about grains from that period, especially from the mid-1800s when a lot of those imports started happening. And then we go back way in time to when we first see in our archaeological studies, when we very first see grains coming onto the scene in terms of agriculture and food. This goes back to the ancient civilization of Sumer. And this civilization, which is now known to be in the area of like Iraq and Turkey and that area, the Fertile Crescent, that is where these ancient grains and the domestication of them originated. They, you know, grasses crossed over and eventually started forming these wheats, is what the archaeologists say. Anyway, so the idea being that these wheats were developed long, long ago, the ancient wheats, is just a little bit different than the heritage wheats that we learn about from the 1800s and so forth,
mm-hmm.
Or the heirloom wheats. So all that could be considered heritage grains, I guess.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, so these are types of grains that we have access to, I guess, that are from... So
yes.
they date back, like if you had some kind of like, I don't know, family tree from these grains, they
follow date back.
Yeah.
And the way that they track that ancestry is through genetic studies, mm-hmm. on the grains. Mm-hmm. So grains have different numbers of sets of chromosomes. And so based on the number of sets of chromosomes, we'll tell you how many times it's hybridized. And so that speaks to the primitive nature of it. Mm-hmm. And so the most primitive grains have 14 chromosomes, whereas the more modern grains have 42.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives you an idea of some of the hybridization that's happened over time.
Okay.
And so in the mid 1950s, in the 1950s to 1960s era, the United States sent people, seed gatherers basically, all over the Middle East and
mm-hmm.
Europe. And they collected from the mountains and all these places, all these different seeds. And those seeds are now preserved and perpetuated inside of seed banks. And we're really lucky in Idaho, in, right here in Aberdeen, just a few hours from us, is one of the largest seed banks in the world.
Okay.
And so they have all of those seed varieties that were collected back there in the mid-1900s. And they are categorizing them, and they are taking care of them. And so literally, you can go and request, you know, thousands of different seeds that are preserved there inside of this National Seed Laboratory. Of course, they'll only send you like 10 or 12 seeds, not very many.
Uh-huh.
But the idea is to preserve these seeds, which is, I think, really valuable for everyone.
Uh-huh. So you take those, like, what do you say, like 10 to 12 seeds, but then you plant them and you grow more. And...
Yeah, and that is one way to do it.
Okay.
And I mean, if you were going to start a new seed from scratch, it's a good way to do it because it's a publicly identified seed variety. And in fact, a lot of the times when they start growing a new seed, they will begin with that seed. It's identified with a PI number, and they can plant that seed. And then they could, if they wanted, hybridize. A lot of the, you know, down at Utah State University, they do a lot of hybridization of wheats and grains down there. And that's what they're doing. They're starting with one of those seeds from the seed bank. So they know exactly what they're starting with.
Mm-hmm.
And they're crossing it over with another known variety.
Okay.
And they kind of take it from there. But the idea is that the systematic saving of seeds is to our advantage, that you know, has happened. But the challenge is to start with only 10 seeds, as you pointed out, is pretty hard, right?
Uh-huh.
Like, how would you ever do that? And so it takes a lot of years. And generally what happens is very few seeds end up in commercial production for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to plant those 10 and then harvest what comes from that and continue doing that for a few years until mm-hmm. you got enough. So in my case, in 2009, I was able to get a seed from a farmer in Germany.
A seed?
Type of seed.
Oh, a type of seed. Okay.
Yeah. He had more of it.
Uh-huh.
You know, he had truckloads of it. He was uh-huh. growing it, but it's an ancient grain called einkorn. And I was able to get my hands on this. It's the most primitive form of wheat on earth.
Wow, okay.
And and so we've grown that here in Idaho a few times since 2009.
Mm-hmm.
And then since then, so there are over 300 different varieties of einkorn seed.
Okay.
That are considered domesticated. But in commercial production, there are only about 10 different types of einkorn in commercial production. And so, you know, we have actually two of those on our farm that we plant and we maintain in Teton, Idaho.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is that, you know, we are not only helping to preserve the seeds, but we're actually making it a commercial venture in that people can buy from us these seeds for making breads and treats and whatever they want, and they can buy flour from us.
Mm-hmm.
We mill it right there on our farm and ship it all over the United States.
Okay, so these are the seeds that you produce and make bread from and sell out
yeah.
are back from in Germany, you said? These seeds
yeah.
are from Germany, and they're, how old did you say they were? Or like,
well, so einkorn dates back, I mean, timelines are really tricky, of uh-huh. course, but according to archaeological evidence, you're looking at 5,000 to 12,000 years.
Wow.
Yeah, so awesome. It's...
So it's back to the basics
to the basics of wheat, and it's the first, as far as we know, it's the first wheat that exists on Earth, this uh-huh. einkorn. And like I said, there are different varieties of it. And even if you visually inspect it, and I've looked at all, as crazy as it sounds, all 300 types of einkorn. I've looked at all those because I got them from the National Seed Bank.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to, you know, look at them, and they do differ a lot. So einkorn is kind of like, some people would even say it's like another species outside of wheat. But it is a wheat.
Uh-huh. It is a wheat.
It is a wheat, but it's not...
wheat's been changed so much
yeah,
since then.
Wheat, actually, its ancestor is an ancient grain called emmer.
Mm-hmm.
And emmer is a cousin of einkorn.
Okay.
Okay, so that makes sense.
Yeah.
And emmer, if I get my math right, I think it has 28 chromosomes. I'm sorry, I should know that off the top of my head. But so einkorn has 14. And this just speaks to the primitive nature of the grain. But there are differences even beyond that. Einkorn contains a totally different type of gluten compared to modern wheat, and it makes it attractive to people that have intolerances to gluten or, you know, issues like that. It's
really?
Yeah.
So it's a different kind of gluten to the
compared
digestive
to modern
system.
Wheat.
So
yeah.
They're probably like the digestive system, like, oh, this is different, so it's not irritated by it.
Yeah.
That's interesting, because I'm actually gluten intolerant.
Okay.
So I'm intrigued by this.
So we have a lot of people who are on gluten-free diets for different health reasons. And the main reason that they choose Einkorn is because of the gluten.
It contains a different type of gluten.
It contains less gluten than modern wheat, and it's a different type of gluten. And so it's very attractive to those people. But there are other reasons for Einkorn, too, because it also contains more nutrition. It's higher in protein, higher in antioxidants. When we make flour with it, it has a slight yellow flavor to it.
A yellow flavor?
A color. Sorry.
Okay, I was like, I've never heard of
yellow
that.
Color. Okay. Just slight.
Yeah.
Not flavor. But the color is just slightly yellow, and it's really, it's pretty, you know, it's interesting when you compare it side by side.
Uh-huh.
And that is the lutein in the Einkorn. And it's high in beta carotene and several other antioxidants. But the nice thing about Einkorn, in my opinion, the best thing about it is the flavor.
Really?
Yeah. And we have a lot of like high-end chefs and bakeries around the United States who buy Einkorn just because of the flavor that adds to their foods.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say they make a sourdough white bread, you know, out of all-purpose white flour. They can add 30% Einkorn in there and increase the flavor profile of the bread. And or they'll make like a pilaf or some sort of a salad that includes Einkorn, and it adds additional flavor, new flavors and colors to the food. So,
how would you describe this flavor?
People describe it as kind of a nutty, a little bit more of a nutty flavor than regular wheat.
Uh-huh. That makes sense. So some of the benefits of, wait, what did you call it again?
Einkorn. Einkorn. E-I-N-K-O-R-N. Yep.
Okay, cool. And so it has a different flavor to it, maybe a little more better than regular bread. And it seems to have more like nutritious value and minerals. Is there other benefits you say this has?
There are some doctors who are studying Einkorn for the benefits that it offers to people who have cardiovascular, health problems like diabetes or even insulin resistance. One doctor, Dr. Davis, did a study with Einkorn, and it was, I don't know how formal of a study it was. It wasn't with a lot of people, but he found that it entered the bloodstream a little bit slower than other types of wheat.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so that might offer some benefits to people who have to be careful with, you know, glucose levels and whatnot in their blood.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the main things. Einkorn is different to bake with than modern wheat, though. It's not.
Okay. You can't just add like the same amount of cups of flour. You have to bake it a little different.
Yeah, it is different. It bakes more quickly. It rises more quickly.
Oh, okay. Well, that's nice. Like, that seems like a great thing.
Yeah, it's like, it would be, I the way I think about it is, it's easier for your body to digest. So if you're using a sourdough Einkorn or a yeast-based Einkorn, it's going to go through that process of proofing more quickly as well. So you have to be aware of that if you're switching to Einkorn. The other thing about baking with Einkorn is that it seems to require less water than modern wheat.
Okay.
And so sometimes we'll reduce our water by up to, you know, 30% even, because it just doesn't need as much water.
Cool. So it seems to me that, you know, and there's a lot of talk, maybe some more controversial things about how, you know, going back to the basics is more healthier for you. So with this Einkorn, it, you know, dates back from forever ago and seems to have more nutritious value. So I don't know, what are your views about, like, why did you start doing this, you know, going towards growing Einkorn?
Well, I think fundamentally, in terms of health, if we, as a general, as a society, will eat less and eat more whole foods, we'll be better off.
Mm-hmm.
Eat less food and eat more whole foods. On top of that, if we reduce and cut out sugar, use natural sweeteners, those types of things will also help with health. But our family's journey started, you know, like anybody's, you get these ideas and you try them and you kind of go a little bit deeper, you know. And with Einkorn, it started with a friend of mine who, his family was very health conscious, and my family, as my wife has always been, I think she's a pro at it, and she's just worked hard at it for a lot of years. And you know, we were making whole wheat bread, and the benefits to eating whole grains are pretty proven in research.
Mm-hmm.
Grains get a bad rap today, but it's generally because we eat too much of them or we eat refined grains.
Yeah.
But when you look at the research on whole grains, Harvard has some really good research on, if you Google Harvard whole grains studies, it's amazing the health benefits in terms of cardiovascular disease, heart disease, prevention of cancer. And whole grains also contain inositol, which your body can use to regulate blood sugar better. So if we use them, but not in excess, then it really can help our body. Anyway, so our family has always been big on whole grains. And there's been a lot that has happened with grains over the last 100 years to make them yield better, to make them make better breads and whatnot. And the result of that is that grain has more gluten in it. And it's possible that there are ties between that and the digestive people have in relation to that. That's possible.
Mm-hmm.
But as a family, we use sourdough baking to help aid in the digestion process, because sourdough, what it does is it eats a lot of the sugars, the immediately available sugars in the flour, and that's helping with your digestive system. It also pre-digests a little bit. Sourdough also, I think, adds a lot of flavor to breads and that kind of stuff. So we've done that, you know, for a long time. Anyway, my friend came to me and he said, you know, Jade, I've been researching because my family just been really struggling with wheat lately, and I found about this ancient grain. You might want to check it out. And he told me it was einkorn. It's like, wow. And I grew up on a farm. I was living in Utah at the time. I grew up on a farm here in Idaho, and I'd always hoped to get back to the farm.
Mm-hmm.
That was my goal.
Awesome.
And so when I found out about einkorn, I was like, wow, that's really neat. And I was able to purchase einkorn.com. I mean, to get that URL was really unusual, and the story in of itself, but I put up a blog, and this guy and I together, we just kind of blogged about it. And then we were contacted by people all over the world, researchers, health food enthusiasts, farmers, just, you know, the variety of people. That, it was really neat. And we were connected immediately with people all over the world about einkorn. And I just thought, well, maybe this would be a project that I could take on eventually to farm. You know, one day our family could farm. And like I said, that was 2009. So we just kind of kept at it. And we were able to get, like I said, that seed from Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And then we started selling einkorn on our website. And eventually got our farm here. My dad owns a farm. He was able to help with some of the farming. And I contracted with other farmers to grow for us. And now we grow it here on our farm. And our farm is an organic farm. And we only sell organic grains. And anyway, it's been a really neat experience to see kind of how it came about. But we also own ancientgrains.com. And there we have a number of different ancient grains. And these are grains that today are popular and are well known, like quinoa.
Mm-hmm.
But some lesser known ones like amaranth or teff. These come from all different parts of the world and where they originated. And now we have access to all these ancient grains. And so one of my favorite things to do with ancient grains is make like this, it's a 10 grain waffle, sourdough waffle. And
a sourdough waffle.
Yeah,
interesting.
And they don't taste sour.
Right.
Because we use baking soda to remove the sour flavor. But
interesting.
My wife developed this recipe, and I just love it. And so we'll just take all these different ancient grains, and we'll put some rice in there and some corn in there. And you know, it's definitely a multi-grain waffle, right?
Uh-huh. Multi, yeah.
Yeah, right. But it's just so good. The flavor is amazing.
Incredible.
So, you know, our journey started back then, and it's just been building on itself, gaining research. And now today, my wife teaches on, you know, classes on health and on, she's really good at living efficiently and eating healthy.
Uh-huh.
It's very hard to do. She's good at that. And so a lot of people in the area know her for that and have been to some of her classes. So,
mm-hmm. So when you say eating efficiently, what does that entail?
Well, our family has 7 kids and 1 on the way, and we farm and have business and very busy.
A lot
busy.
Of mouths to feed, right?
A lot of mouths, so it's busy, right?
Yeah.
And so nobody can spend a lot of time just cooking all day.
Right.
If you're going to eat healthy and you want to eat raw foods, you're talking about a lot of time cooking.
Yeah, preparation.
And we still
can't just pop in a waffle in the microwave or
exactly.
whatever, the toaster.
Yeah, so we have a very good rotation where every day for lunch we eat salad and We don't eat the same salad once in a month. It's a different salad every day. And so she's just done all this work on menus and meal preparation to make it simple. And then evening for dinner, you know, a meal that's, you know, includes whole foods and a really good rotation. And I'm the bread maker in the family. I haven't always been, but she taught me some of the things, and I just really enjoy making the sourdough bread. So we usually have bread around, and we like making pizzas and crepes and all kinds of different things with it.
That's awesome.
And, you know, I think the biggest thing about making it efficient is being careful to not take on projects that you can't handle.
Right.
And getting the right equipment and understanding the process well enough that, you know, like that 11-grain sourdough waffle, you know, it literally just takes a few minutes to prepare the night before.
Mm-hmm.
And the morning of, you mix it up, and people go and buy mixes, you know, these whole mixes for waffles or whatever, but mm-hmm. it's so easy to do yourself if you have the knowledge and the tools to do it.
Right, and probably less expensive.
It is less expensive, yeah. And,
cool.
You know, if you can buy grains in bulk, just as an example, you can save a lot of money as opposed to prepackaged flours. But you gotta, you know, you need to have a mill, and we are definitely big proponents of mills. And today, you know, farmers typically are going to grow a handful of different types of wheat. You know, if you were to travel in this valley anywhere, they're going to be growing like a Jefferson hard red or a West bread hard white, or there are a lot of different varieties, but they kind of fall in the classification of hard red and hard white. And but then there are small farmers here in this valley and throughout the United States who are trying to grow new grains and different types of grains. And
okay, kind of like the hybrid thing you're talking about?
Well, like some of these ancient grains. They're going back and they're getting these heirloom and ancient grains, and they're growing them on their farm. And a lot of these farmers don't have milling capabilities.
Uh-huh.
And so the only way you can be able to use those grains is if you have a mill in your home. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But in some ways, it's almost like going back to George Washington, you know, and how it made the United States more free when he built that mill. It brings that same level of freedom, I think, to families when they have a mill where they can get their own grains from a local farmer and be milling it into flour right there in their own home. It's a level of freedom that just didn't exist, you know, in the past. And, you know, there were times when wars were fought over wheat, and the Romans and the Egyptians just battled over wheat because the Egyptians had so much power over the Romans because the Romans were so reliant on them for that wheat. And today we take for granted how easily we can get food. But I think it's important to realize that, you know, the more control we take over our own food, like you say, we do save money, but it also can save our health.
Absolutely. Yeah. It seems like we're, you know, just heading in this fast-paced world of, you know, pop it in the microwave, like easy access. I don't have time to cook foods. Or, you know, the money to buy all these things, but they really do put in a lot of benefits.
They do.
And you just take the time to learn.
Yes. It has to be a hobby at some level, right?
Yeah, you have a little bit of dedication, but it's worth it.
It is.
So there's a lot of benefits to it. So you said you started this in like 2009.
Yes.
So it's been like about like a 10-year investment.
Yeah, 10 years.
Yeah? Oh, that's awesome. And then, so tell me about, like, the business side. So do you have, like, a store that you sell the grains, or is it everything online?
We have people who come out to our farm to pick up grains.
Okay.
Every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we love to meet people from the area, and especially those who are, you know, looking for exactly what we're doing. It's really fun to make that connection. But most of our customers are nationwide, and they're buying from our website.
Okay.
We don't have a retail outlet yet. Mm-hmm. That we'll be working on that. We hope to eventually. The name of the business is the Grand Teton Farm and Mill, and we hope to eventually have a facility where not only do we right now it's in the warehouse behind my house. It's a 3,200 square foot facility. It's not sufficient for long term, and we hope to be able to expand to a bigger facility. But our goal on the business side is, this area right now is reliant on just a handful of crops. I mean, you could almost isolate it down to four crops. I mean, there are more than four because some additional grains like canola, sometimes corn will show up, peas. But most of the people around here are growing potatoes, alfalfa, wheat, and barley. Mm-hmm. And they're rotating between those. And often they're going between potatoes and barley, mm-hmm. you know, back and forth. Or barley and wheat, you know. And the best thing for the soil is if you're rotating different crops.
Okay, right.
And so it'd be a big advantage to this area if we could bring in different crops. And some of these ancient grains that are not grasses. You know, grasses like wheat are going to require a lot of nitrogen. Mm-hmm. But if you use something like buckwheat, it actually puts nitrogen into the soil naturally, you know. So you come up with a crop rotation. So
incorporating the heritage wheat.
Yes.
And you're saying it's good, better for the soil?
It'll help with soil development.
Ah.
And our hope is that we can develop a network of organic farmers here in eastern Idaho that we can contract with to grow these grains. Thereby, we'll be adding new crops to their rotation.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be building a local grain economy around here. And hopefully we can supply these heritage ancient grains and heirloom grains throughout Idaho and Wyoming, Utah. Who knows where it will go, but we currently provide all over the United States, but we'd like to get more of a local distribution going on as well. And
more
we have some restaurants around here that use our grains, Arugula Deli in Idaho Falls. It's an awesome restaurant, and Marcel down there does amazing food. And so he uses our einkorn in his bread, and we've got some of those things beginning to happen. It's exciting. So
Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, there's so many great benefits from it, and it's, I like what you said, like a wheat economy, or like a...
Yes.
Yeah, we're just, you know, making Idaho, our wheat, better.
It's, yeah.
You know, I mean, not just like, hey, we're building really cool, good for you wheat, and, you know, we're going to market that. We're incorporating that into the world.
Right, like it wouldn't make sense to buy potatoes that were grown in New Hampshire here, right?
Mm-hmm,
that would be silly. And we grow so much food in Idaho, mm-hmm. and the more we can use of our own food, the better it is for everybody.
Right.
And absolutely. And you know, we can become more efficient as a society that way, and support farmers and additional crops in the area, and I think, you know, just provide some good to the area.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. And some of the future plans you were saying, just kind of expanding that market, expanding out to the local farmers, and so did you say you were going to try to establish like some kind of market or like place where people can come in and buy like bulk wheat?
Yeah, we want to be able to have our full processing there, but eventually have a front end retail presence as well.
Okay, where would that be? Like
probably on Highway 33.
Okay,
we're located in Teton, so it'd probably be out that way, but. You know, so people can come in and they can buy grains either in small retail packages or in bulk,
mm-hmm.
you know, 50-pound bags. Or one of the unique products that we launched recently is a freshly milled flour. And it's unique because when people buy flour from the store, how old is that, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And to make a flour shelf stable, they have to remove a lot of nutrients from it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why often we're offered the all-purpose flours. And if we buy something that's considered a whole wheat flour, it'll be labeled whole wheat flour. A lot of times the way that those are made is they sift out the germ, which has a lot of the oils in it, and they'll add back in things like the bran and whatnot to add the darker color to it. But they have to keep out a lot of those nutrients so that it's still shelf stable.
Right.
So this product that we recently launched is a freshly milled whole grain flour.
Mm-hmm.
And what that means is, let's say you place your order today, it will not ship until the day that it mills.
Oh, okay.
So we're not just going to grab a bag of flour that's sitting on the shelf and ship it out to you. We literally, okay, we have your order. Now we're going to mill that order for you, and it will ship that same day.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a really neat product, and people are excited about it because if you want to eat whole grains and you don't have a mill, then that's an option for you. But of course, you know, we encourage people to get their own mill, and we have a mill that we offer on our website because we are big fans of getting a mill in people's home if they can, you know.
Interesting. That's really cool. Do you sell to other like businesses? I think here in Rexburg, like we have where they sell different kinds of, I bought rice flour there one time. So do you sell to other kind of businesses like that?
Yeah, we don't have a retailer here who is offering our grains yet.
Okay.
We're still trying to Well, the name escapes me right here in Rexbury, the health food store.
That's okay. Yeah, I've been there once, but I know
what is
it?
Nature's Nook.
About.
That's what it is.
Okay, yeah.
So Nature's Nook has our einkorn in there.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. They don't have a lot of our other grains yet. Mm-hmm. And so we're working with them. We're kind of getting it started that way. But, you know, we don't have a strong retail distribution is what I mean. Mm-hmm. So Nature's Nook does have it, but yeah, we definitely want to get that. It is going to require hiring somebody or contracting with an organization, so we're still working on that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, locally, we don't have a lot happening yet other than individual customers who come out and buy from us.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's awesome. Well, I'm excited for all the plans that you guys have going on. Like, me personally am excited for it to grow because my gluten allergies.
Yes.
I would love to have this. What's maybe the best thing to use with this einkorn.
Yeah.
What would be the best thing that you've made using it?
It makes very nice pizza crust.
Pizza crust.
Yeah.
Cool.
But I don't know. I'm probably, just because we've been doing it for so long, nothing really has prevented us, you know, from making it, you know, as far as desserts. It's not as good for like a pie crust.
Okay.
But it's really good for tortillas, for flatbreads, pizzas.
Okay, so not so much the sugary.
Well, even like a lot of quick breads, like the waffles, it's amazing for that, or pancakes. Or a cobbler, anything like that, it works great for.
Ooh, a cobbler, that sounds like that would be really good.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, when you go to a pie crust, einkorn, the challenge with it is it bakes more quickly, and it's really hard to get that pie crust just right, and there are better grains for that. Einkorn is actually ideal for pasta, and pasta is a new product that we'll be coming out with here in the future. And it'll be a whole grain einkorn pasta. It's good because it has a really good flavor profile to it, and einkorn lends itself well to pasta.
That's cool.
And, you know, as far as making breads, it's not the ideal grain for making breads, but it's not, I can make a really nice loaf of bread with einkorn, but it took some time to learn how to do that. Mm-hmm. And if you go to our website at einkorn.com/sourdough, there's a PDF you can download there, and it has my whole grain sourdough bread process that I use. And I update that from time to time as I learn new things. But you can make bread with it, but it's not the best bread wheat, right?
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to if you bought a bread flour, you know, a whole all-purpose flour made for making bread, you're going to get a lot easier to make bread out of that than it is einkorn.
Yeah, but probably not as healthy.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's why we bake with einkorn. And that's why we've gone through the process of learning how to do all these different things. And at einkorn.com, we have all kinds of different recipes about anything you could imagine that are on the website of how to make this or that with einkorn.
That's awesome. Cool. So you've got website. Like, the main thing people should go to is the website to get access to it.
Yeah, einkorn.com is probably the best place to get that. Ancientgrains.com has the grains on it, and it has some information, but we're limited on resources to get this all done, so we haven't been able to add as much to ancientgrains.com.
Okay. Cool. Well, is there anything else that you wanted to share about heritage wheat or einkorn?
No, I think that it's really good you're talking about it, and we're interested in anybody in the area who's an organic farmer that's looking to do more with their farm. We would like to help them with their program and providing grains, and we also have other ancient grains organizations that are interested in contracting with farmers. And so we want to help network them to find those opportunities and just keep supporting the local grains economy here.
Cool. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for coming in and talking about it.
Thank you for having me, Jessica.
Of course.